Florida Roundup is live from the studios of Key West today here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. It's great to be along with you. Living in the Florida Keys is life in paradise, but it can come at a cost. The Keys struggle to strike a balance between the natural beauty of the archipelago and the demands of life on the islands. Still, the affordability challenges, the threat from hurricanes, and the risk of higher seas cannot dilute that conch spirit of independence, self-resiliency, and individualism. Today, what are communities doing to protect and adapt to the changing environment, including rising seas? The sun and fun are well known, but what is life like when the Keys are home? And in an area dominated by tourism, how do the Keys retain that authentic conch character? The Florida Roundup, live from the studios of Key West, next here on WLRN. Live on this Friday for the Florida Roundup from the Helmrick Theater at the studios of Key West. Welcome, everybody, for a live broadcast here on WLRN as the Florida Roundup is on the road at the end of the road here in the Keys. I'm Tom Hudson, a special edition of the Florida Roundup today, live at the edge in the Florida Keys. We're just a few blocks right now from the southernmost point, celebrating and examining the islands strung out like a comma at the edge of the continent. What is life like for those who have put down stakes in the rocky soil, making their living here, building their lives and businesses among the beauty and the promise of paradise? We'll hear from those calling the Keys home throughout the next hour here on our special program, the Florida Roundup from the Keys. You can join the conversation as well. Maybe you visit the Keys for the fishing, the snorkeling, the diving, the boating, or just to escape the mainland. What do the Keys represent for the rest of Florida? The phone lines are open on this Friday, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You can also send us a tweet at WLRN and join us on our Facebook page for our Facebook Live from Teresa Frontato, our digital director. The WLRN Facebook page is up and live with the video right now. Now, consider this. Florida was the last chunk of land that would become the United States to appear from under a retreating ocean many, 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 many years ago. Much of what we call Florida today began as coral and limestone underwater hundreds of thousands of years ago. The oldest record measuring the ups and downs of ocean tides in Florida is right here in Key West. It dates back to 1880, gauging the rise and the fall of the waters surrounding the Florida Keys. And the story the data tells us is one of higher sea levels, 8 inches higher in the past century alone, and the pace of that is increasing. Seas are rising about an eighth of an inch per year. So, figure this. It means that the ocean rises an inch higher at the end of two presidential terms. That's the reality of higher seas and South Florida. And while all of South Florida is vulnerable, the Keys are the most vulnerable to higher seas. So this is where we begin with our special live program of the Florida Roundup today. Nancy Klinginer is our southernmost reporter here at WLRN, based at the studios of Key West. She is along with us. Allison Higgins, the sustainability coordinator for the city of Key West. Chris Berg, the Nature Conservancy South Florida Conservation Director, and Captain Will Benson is a professional fishing guide at World Angling. All of them with unique takes on life here at the edge in the Florida Keys. Nan, what is at risk when it comes to the higher seas across the Keys?
Well, everything, really. Our economy, our ability to live here, and not just from the rising of the water itself, but from the costs that are associated with that. You know, I have a $4,000 flood insurance bill now, and I'm on the edge of what's called an X zone, so that's not even as bad as it could get. And there's just, you know, a real question of how we adapt and how much that is going to cost.
It's a question, Allison, that you have to wrestle with as the sustainability chief in the city of Key West. What evidence, first of all, are Key Westerners seeing of sea level rise?
That's what's so interesting about working in the Keys is because we are surrounded by the water. Those of us who have lived here for a while see it. You see it in the intersections where the stormwater comes up through the drains during the perigean tide. So we drive through it.
And so what is the risk then to the city?
The biggest thing is our tax base. You know, you've got the people that want to be here and call it home, like all of us here on the panel, and then you've got everybody that comes down to visit. And, you know, while it's true that more people are visiting Alaska to see, you know, what's shrinking, I don't want that to be the reason why people come here.
There may be less of the Keys to come visit.
Right. But we've always been an adaptive folk. Yeah. You know, when we came down, we had no water. We built cisterns.
Right.
We had no timber, so we resourced shipwrecks. And we've been playing this game for a long time now. And it's the good news is it's incremental change, and we're trying to stay ahead of it every step we can.
Chris Berg, what about the evidence that you're seeing out in what's left of the wilds of the Florida Keys?
Well, I live on Big Pine Key, which is about 30 miles up the road from Key West. And when you walk around the edges of the island where the pine forests, which are on the high ground, intersect with the freshwater marshes and the mangroves on the lower ground, you can see very plainly that the pine trees are dying out and the mangroves are moving in. It's a marked stamp on the landscape.
And what could be even the short-term impact of that, of losing those the type of vegetation that is demands fresh water and it being replaced with vegetation that can live in brackish or salty water?
So the pine forests are, as you said, freshwater dependent. They have a whole host of species, some of which are federally listed as endangered or threatened, some of which, like the key deer, the lower keys marsh rabbit, and others, are really living on the edge of extinction at all times because their populations are so small to begin with. So as they lose habitat as a result of sea level rise or as a result of development or anything else, that just puts them in greater jeopardy. So there's been amazing efforts to purchase and effectively manage the land that they live on to preserve their habitat, but the sea is chipping away at that land area.
Well, Benson, you make your life on that water. What are you seeing?
Oh, I'm seeing a lot of changes, and a lot of changes that you're mentioning here with not only sea level rise, but I notice it in the migratory shift patterns that the birds are taking, that the fish are taking. I'm noticing and hearing throughout the state about large algae blooms that are as big as they've ever been, and they seem to be increasing in frequency. Obviously, we all went through Hurricane Irma last year, witnessing what happened to the environment after that. All of those things are part of this thing called climate change. But I would make one note, and based on my experience, I spend a lot of time on the water. I think, obviously, climate change is something that's happening, but I actually put a large amount of faith in nature to be able to accommodate for that and protect us from that. One of the, obviously the coral reef, the health of the coral reef is vitally important, yep, not only to me as a fisherman, but also to us as a community. It's going to knock down those storms and provide the barrier, same as the marsh and the Everglades, these grass flats. All of these actually have natural ways of dealing with this climate change. But we obviously need to do more to deal with the large-scale systemic problems. But we all are going to depend on these, similar to, fellow warriors in this fight against climate change. These are the grass flats, the coral reef, the natural protective elements. And to that end, I'd like to say one thing. When I have been out on the water since the hurricane, we witnessed, particularly the areas off of Big Pine, where a lot of islands got hit very, very hard, and there was literally chunks of these islands that have been ripped off, yeah, and deposited onto flats. Well, as devastating as that might seem, it's also the seeds of life being spread. Mm. And there is a natural mechanism at work there where the islands are building up on top of the fallen debris. The flats are going to have new islands that will build and build. So there's ways and mechanisms that the environment's going to deal with this climate change. We need to be aware. We need to recognize it. We need to hear what the professionals have to say, what the scientists have to say, and we need to find the leadership to do something about it.
We are talking about climate change and sea level rise here live from the Florida Keys, live from Key West on a special edition of the Florida Roundup, Life at the Edge in the Florida Keys. I'm Tom Hudson. You can join our conversation, 800-743-9576, our live studio audience. We've got a microphone right there as well. If folks in the crowd have an experience that they've seen or experienced directly with sea level rise, and Brian Roberts, our guitarist, is along with us as well for music throughout the next hour or so. Chris Berg with the Conservancy, do you share the optimism that you're hearing from Will Benson in terms of Mother Nature addressing climate change? And what does that mean for you? And what does it mean for the community with the optimism that you're hearing from Will?
Well, I do share the optimism. I mean, we've been experiencing hurricanes, and we've been experiencing relatively slow sea level rise here in the Florida Keys for millennia. So these ecosystems, these natural features that, as Will said, are protective of our infrastructure, our homes and businesses, our way of life, can take a lot of abuse. Eventually, hopefully thousands of years from now, or certainly hundreds, the Keys will be underwater, but we've got an awful long time before that happens. And we need to try to think about buying time by addressing the root causes of climate change, which are predominantly greenhouse gas emissions and deforestation and forest degradation, but also be really smart about adaptation. That is, changing the way that we live here in the Florida Keys and we live in coastal areas around the world, really. I think the city of Key West is doing an incredible job. Monroe County is doing an incredible job, as are many of the other local governments and counties associated with the Southeast Florida Regional Climate Change Compact. But recognizing not only the protective values of nature, but also being smart about how we build our infrastructure, where we put it, and being aware that these changes are occurring. We need to take them into account.
When you and Will talk about addressing the underlying issue and the causes of climate change, that is a state and national and global conversation. When you're talking about adaptation and mitigation, Allison, that is a conversation that's happening at City Hall and at county halls throughout South Florida. The resources, however, that it takes a local municipal government to adapt to the kind of changes you're seeing, the 1/8 of an inch a year of higher sea levels, the gurgling up of groundwater during high tides, the airport at Key West seeing sunny day flooding, for instance, and those kinds of threats. What are the resources that the city is having to pull from in order to make the kind of adaptation and mitigation necessary so that there is a Key West in hundreds of years, as Chris spoke about?
So long before we even knew to call it adaptation, we were making changes. So back in the 80s is when we started our stormwater master plan, and we put in the first one-way duckbill valves, tidal valves up. 20 years, when that stopped a bunch of flooding that used to happen on Lower Duval. After that, we put in a good 20 gravity wells throughout the streets. We just packed up 10 applications for FEMA mitigation money for our stormwater projects. $5 million we're asking them to help relieve a bunch of different areas throughout the city. But yeah, we can't do it on our own dime, but we're looking at every angle that we can to look at state and federal grants.
Looking for those for the funds to, mm-hmm. to bring back to Key West. Nan Klinger, what about communities up and down the Keys? Key West obviously is the population center here in Monroe County, but amongst the highest ground in the Keys as well. But up and down the Keys, these governments, the county government and some of the more smaller local governments, have had to respond.
Right. The county has just started working on two road elevation projects, one in Key Largo and one on Big Pine Key, where they have seen sunny day flooding repeatedly. But those are not cheap. The third of a mile on Big Pine Key is going to cost $2.6 million, and the quarter mile in Key Largo is going to cost $1 million. So
$1 million a quarter mile for higher roads.
Yeah.
Money's got to come from somewhere. Will Benson, some of that money may come from clients of yours who are traveling into the Keys and looking to catch some fish.
Yeah, they do, and they come also in other ways. For a lot of my folks, support a lot of the nonprofits that are, doing a lot of the important work to understand the mechanisms that are impacting us here in South Florida and in the Keys. And, we're really on the front lines of this climate change. And I think, if anything, look, I'm a fishing guide, but I get a chance to, like you said, have clients on the front of my boat. I think that being a spokesman for this community, for the changes that we're experiencing, is really a part and parcel of what I do. And my message is that, we are here on the front lines of this climate change fight. And we need to understand that we have partners, not only, the government and the other citizens, but also the natural environment. And it's really our job as the city of Key West. We've always had a kind of resiliency, a living on the edge of the world, a do-it-yourself spirit. Mm-hmm. And we found a way to, to live on the edge of nature and to make accommodations and adjustments throughout the years with things like hurricanes. And this climate change is yet another one. And it's very important for us to report back and to let the rest of the folks in this country, you know, whether they're in the middle of the country or somewhere else that doesn't experience sea level change, that might be seeing tornadoes or you know, fires or anything like that, that believe us when we tell you that this is happening. And we better figure out that we are in a locked partnership with the natural environment if we're going to, you know, survive and make this, especially down here in the Keys.
Chris Berg, you operate with some of those folks outside from here. What is the message that you're delivering beyond the Keys, not only to the Nature Conservancy folks nationally, but into the general population, to have the understanding that the canary in the coal mine when it comes to sea level rise specifically, but climate change generally, is right here in the Keys?
Well, I think it's really important for people to understand just what a special and incredibly valuable natural resource and cultural resource we have here. The real estate is world-renowned for being desirable and, of course, very expensive. The natural environment has a lot of unique features that are found nowhere else in the world. So another way of saying that is we've got a lot to lose. We don't want to lose these things. We recognize that change is coming. What we want to do is buy time. We can't lose sight of the fact that there are root causes of this problem. We need to focus on them. Greenhouse gas emissions, forest loss.
But to that end, though, Chris, and let me ask Allison in part of that, what is the role locally toward that? Because, clearly that is a macro issue. It is an enormous issue. If Key West or Monroe County were to go carbon neutral today, is that going to change the trajectory of the contributions that are leading to sea level rise?
Yeah, I think Allison will be the best person to talk about the incredible value of walking the talk because she's in a position with her role with the city of Key West to represent that very well-known, world-renowned municipality. But I think we also need to talk the talk. We need to spread the word that we've got incredible resources, they're at risk, and there are solutions. We can't lose hope. We can't lose sight of the fact that we understand this problem. There may be debate in some circles, but there's certainly no debate among scientists and people who look at this issue objectively. We need to tackle this. We need to own the problem if we're going to solve it.
So, Allison, how about it, walking the walk?
Well, absolutely. And the thing is you're absolutely correct that if we went carbon neutral yesterday, the Keys are still going under. But if we don't make the changes, why should anybody else? Mm. Right? If we're not willing to try ourselves, then because it is, it's every one person everywhere. So that's what I really like about where we live, because it takes an island. Sitting right in front of me is a woman who started the first recycling program back in 88. It was all volunteer run. We established our tree commission back in 1970, and before the hurricane, we had 30% canopy cover. We only lost 2%, but we're actually are strengthening our programs to put more trees, and we've been using biodiesel since 2007. Both of our city marinas are certified by FDEP as clean marinas.
FDEP is the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. That's all right.
You
speak municipality, I'll speak. I try to interpret best I can.
We've done a lot with LED lightings. We've done some projects in the neighborhoods. Keys Energy, our local energy utility, every single one of our streetlights has been LED for over a decade, if not more. I'm not sure. My favorite new stuff is in 2014. Our version, we have a building permit program where for residential houses you have to apply for it because land is a commodity.
And disappearing at that.
We have our own local rules that are higher than state and federal standards. So to build a new house here, you have to get basic green certification. You have to build 1.5 feet higher than base flood elevation. And you have to put in a cistern. And because of that program, since 2014, we have 887,000 gallons worth of cistern capacity. We've got 85 bronze, 119 silver, 128 gold, and 14 platinum new residences, and 22 electric vehicle plug-ins.
Nan, let me ask you, since Key West wants to give itself a round of applause for that, sure, by all means. Nan, let me ask you, has the conversation around climate and the threat of climate change and sea level rise, has it changed at all since Hurricane Irma in the last 10 months or so? Has it brought a new quality at all to the conversation?
I don't think so, because, I mean, anybody who was here in 2004 and 2005, especially with Wilma,
yeah,
understood that hurricanes, you know, are a thing when you live here. And if you look at history, you know hurricanes are a thing if you live here. And I think most people understand that there's a possibility they're getting more intense because of climate change. So I don't think so. I mean, people All right. who live here know.
One final question for the fishermen up here. We asked our listeners if they had questions for residents in the Keys. Gary in West Palm Beach sent us this question, Will, and I think you're the guy to ask it to. What's the best bait for stone crab trap?
That's an easy answer.
And how long should you let it soak?
Oh, this is a great, great question, and I'm so happy to answer it because we're going to solve two. We're going to, one, answer the question, and I'm going to tell you about a species that's just gone wild all over the Keys. We have a huge problem with iguanas. Mm-hmm. They're not native. Yep. And I will tell you that iguanas make about the best stone crab.
Oh, there you go. There you go. All right. Will Benson, professional fishing guide at World Angling. Chris Berg with us, the Nature Conservancy, South Florida Conservation Director. Allison Higgins, Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Key West. Nancy Klingener, our southernmost reporter at WLRN. Nancy, you stick around to the three of you. Thank you so much for joining us here on a special live edition from Key West, the Florida Roundup. It continues after this. The cost of paradise, affording life in the Florida Keys. That's next. Music from Brian Roberts here on a live edition of the Florida Roundup, Life at the Edge in the Florida Keys. We are live here on WLRN from the studios at Key West. It is great to be along with you. Wonderful to be here in Monroe County. The average price of a home in Monroe County is over $500,000. The average rent cost, probably a couple $1,000s a month up and down the island chain. The Keys enjoy, though, an average income well above the state and national average, but the cost of life in the Keys certainly can be high. So how does this affect the quality of life here in Monroe County? As all of Florida is wrestling with affordability challenges, how is this community responding? How are you responding to it even on the mainland? You can join our conversation, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN on the telephone, on Twitter at WLRN, and our live Facebook video on WLRN's Facebook page. Gwen Filosa is along with us, a reporter here in the Keys. Gwen, first of all, describe how you wound up in the Keys. Everybody has a great Keys story who lives here. And tell us about how you have addressed the affordability challenges and what you've experienced.
Well, my story is I needed a job, and Key West said yes, and I came down here from New Orleans, where I thought I had a really small apartment. At 800 square feet. I just couldn't believe I was lowering myself. And I've been here 7 years. I've lived in five places. One place was very dilapidated, but I stayed there forever because it was cheap. And right now I have 230 square feet for $1,300. And that's actually affordable. I looked it up. I actually make that. Me and the dog call that home. And we're very happy. I was on a ride along with the cops in Stock Island recently, and like last week, and I couldn't believe what I saw people living in. It brought me to tears.
Debbie Zutant is also along with us, longtime resident and a bartender. Debbie, how did you wind up here in Monroe County?
Well, I was one of those people that came down for 3 months. 8 years ago. I just never left. My husband and I were artists, and we came down to do some art shows from upstate New York, and we just fell in love with it. We lived in a commune in a tent for the first 6 months we were here.
In the Keys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kim won't say where, but yeah.
And how have you tackled the affordability challenge?
I work 8 days a week.
Nicole Smith is also with us, a public school teacher, a math coach. Is that the right
correct
way to describe
mm-hmm.
that? First of all, Nicole, thank you for spending your last Friday of summer vacation with us here on the Florida Roundups.
It was either here or school. So.
Teachers go back in Monroe County on Monday, so Nicole decided to come here. Nicole, tell us about your experience of moving to the Keys and dealing with the cost of living.
I actually moved and met my husband in 2000 down in Key West, and we spent a year here, went back to Virginia for 13 years, and then recently returned about 6 years ago. I'm fortunate that we are a dual-income family, so our ability to live here has been a little bit more advantageous than some of the other people that I've met, but we're happy and fortunate to have a house right in Key West.
It's a real cross-section that the three of you represent, both in terms of your professional careers, your personal lives, and the ability to generate the income from the industries in which you work. Gwen, in media, and I work in media, and we know the trials and tribulations of media. Nicole, as a public employee, as a school teacher, a public school teacher, and Debbie, as a member of the large crew of hospitality and restaurant and service industry workers here, making it all happen. A question oftentimes when you look at simply the economic statistics, the cost of housing, the cost of insurance, why do you stay? Gwen.
It's a beautiful place. I never really had been here sober before. So it's a beautiful place. The people are amazing. I've been accepted here in a way that I never felt accepted where I grew up in Indiana. And people like me fit in really well here.
Debbie, you're nodding your head vigorously.
Right? I am. Yeah. There's a saying down here. Everybody down here is either running to or running from something. We're all here because we're not all there. So.
Well, we're glad you're here with
like,
us today.
Like Gwen, I fit in really well here. It's just somewhere I was just accepted and I look down right normal here.
Yeah. Nicole?
We are very honored to live here and will not leave. We are raising two children here, and there is no other place I would rather raise my kids than in Key West in the Florida Keys. I'm actually sorry we didn't move here earlier.
Nicole, you have another interesting perspective in that with the Monroe County Public School District, you are involved with recruiting teachers to come and teach in Monroe County. What are your experiences with that?
Right. So this year I've had the opportunity to work with my administrators at Horace O'Brien to really reach out and fill. We had to fill 14 teaching positions just at HOB alone this year. And I know that some of the turnover rate for teachers in all of the public schools up and down the Keys are similar. So I spent the majority of my summer during summer school combing through applications and speaking to people and really doing interviews for different teaching positions here. We were fortunate to hire people to come here. Unfortunately, six of those teachers actually accepted the jobs and then had to turn them down due to not being able to find housing.
Hmm. What were those conversations like? How did they communicate? How did you communicate with them?
I actually sort of took off my teaching hat for a while and put on my life coach hat because it was really a matter of doing the interviews, accepting those people, offering them the position, and then getting on every yard sale page and speaking to anybody who I could to look for apartments and for living for those teachers. I drove around the Keys. I took pictures for people. I sent them phone numbers because really making that transition from the mainland to here is challenging, and convincing them that it's okay to live in a 600-square-foot apartment is all right, and that's what we do.
I think Gwen would like 600 square feet. That would double
the
space.
That would be a mansion, wouldn't it?
Right, yeah. Plenty of room for the dog at that point. Have its own wing.
But it's really what it comes down to. And those people that really wanted to come here, but they just said they just can't make it work. And that's challenging.
So, Debbie, I pick up on that, though. I mean, you know, as Nicole is trying to recruit folks to come down here, be part of the community, and they see the beauty, Gwen, that attracted you, the lifestyle that attracted all three of you, but then they just can't make it work.
Yeah, one of the places I work at, Coconuts in Big Pine Key, I've been there for about 6 years, and that is where the working people live. That is where the poor people live. It's not the rich people in Key West. It's the poor working people.
Nothing finer than a piner.
Nothing finer than a big piner. There are folks that are working three jobs that are living in tents because we've got landlords doubling their rents. People are really struggling to find places to live. On the very same day that I was able to find a mobile home for a couple that had lost everything once in the hurricane, then again in a fire 6 months later because their landlord didn't fix their electric. I was able to find them a mobile home. And that very same day, three people told me they were leaving because they just can't afford to live here. Yeah. And these are the people that make the Keys what the Keys are. Yeah. And it's so darn sad.
Yeah. Nicole, you're nodding in agreement there.
Well, you know, we live in paradise, and I know that tourism is a big industry, obviously, but we also are raising families here. And Key West houses two of the largest schools in the district, each the high school and HOB, teach about 1,200 kids every single day. So with that comes families that needs homes and some teachers that needs homes. And as a community, I think that we need to make that be mindful of the fact that we need to find places for those people to live who are here to help raise our children.
Talking about life in the Florida Keys here live from the studios at Key West here on WLRN, a special live edition of the Florida Roundup on this Friday. On the road, life at the edge in the Florida Keys. You can still join our conversation, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Gwen Filosa, reporter here in the Keys, I want you to pick up on what you're hearing from Debbie and Nicole, and what is the conversation like in terms of affordability and addressing the affordability challenges? It's not unique to Monroe County by any stretch of the imagination.
Correct.
But what is the conversation here like? What are you picking up on in county hall and city halls, but also in bars and restaurants and on the in the classrooms and elsewhere?
Well, there is building going on. There are a bunch of places just went up right by the jail, and they're filled. They're market, mostly market rate. The city plans to build 104 units on Stock Island, and building is going on. And that becomes its own debate, where a lot of people say, look, how many more houses can you put up? The governor promised us 1,300 building permits mm-hmm. for affordable housing throughout the Keys. Mm-hmm. And that came from Marathon asking for yeah. 300 permits. And, I mean, can you build your way out of it? I don't know. I mean, a lot of places that I would be able to rent for $900 7 years ago are now condos. So, I mean, things change.
Debbie?
I just want to say that the building that's happening is coming at the expense of people from in the Upper Keys. The Rogo units, they closed down a trailer park in Big Pine Key, the Seahorse, to take 125 Rogo units so they could build a hotel.
Rogo units?
Rate of growth initiative.
Okay.
Basically, you can't build a new house without a permit.
Right.
So they closed down a trailer park that had 125 families in it so they could build that nice, fancy hotel on Stock mm-hmm. Island. So, yes, there is building going on, but at what expense?
They're building on Stock Island, three trailer parks will be history.
Yeah.
And they say they're building affordable housing. We'll see if that even happens.
Yeah, affordable and modular homes as well.
Correct.
To address, obviously, some of the environmental threat. Nicole, the school district, meantime, is exploring providing housing for staff and for teachers. Is that a solution that that you would support, the teachers would support?
I'm certainly grateful for our school district and our leadership to have those conversations. And I think that anything that our school district is willing to do to recruit teachers and to keep families here is definitely worth exploring. And I think at this point, there really isn't a bad idea thrown out there.
Hmm.
It needs to be reasonable, and it's not just teachers. It's really our hospitality industry. It's our first responders. It's not just teachers. It's all those people that are servicing our community that are struggling with
Sometimes it's called workforce housing. Sometimes it's called economically vital employees.
Workforce housing, though, if you are hired as a first-year teacher, you don't qualify for it because Monroe County is a great place to work, and I'm proud of it. However, we as a teacher, you may not qualify for that affordable housing in the workforce housing.
In terms of income levels.
In terms of income levels.
Gotcha. We have a question here in our audience at the studios. Go ahead, sir. What's your name?
Randy Becker from the Bahama Village, part of Key West.
Go ahead, Randy.
And I just heard you talking about people leaving, and one of the effects of Irma was that our social fabric got torn apart. And the question then arises, we're in the middle of a suicide epidemic here in the Keys. We've all been affected by it, especially in the service industry. What are we going to do about that social fabric that makes being in the Keys so good for us, where so many people are not feeling it right now?
Randy, let me say that if anybody listening is having thoughts of suicide or knows someone, you can call the suicide hotline. It's 24 hours a day. This is the phone number that you can call, 800-273-8255. It's the 24-hour hotline, 800-273-8255. And in the Florida Keys, mental health services are provided by the Guidance Care Center. Gwen, how about Randy's question in terms of the social fabric?
I mean, I'm a reporter. I can't speak on behalf of everybody, but this is a tough place to live. It's a lot like New Orleans. People come down. I mean, we love to talk about the party aspect, but there's a lot of hard drinking and alcoholism and drug addiction that goes on down here. Mm-hmm. And but as far as people leaving, I mean, people leave all the time, and it's a place. I've met people, I don't know how many times. I'm going to live here forever. In 2 months, they're gone because it is a tough place to make ends meet. But I don't have an answer to that question. As a reporter, people are struggling after Irma, but it's not new to be struggling down here.
And a big piece of the social fabric can be local institutions, and there is no more local of an institution as a public school oftentimes. And so, Nicole, how do you hear kind of Randy's question and desire for that fabric to be woven back together?
So at school, we definitely recognize that many of our students are coming to us with some trauma from either their past life or present life. And so our school district has been very supportive in hiring additional social workers and making sure that our school counselors and our teachers are well trained to recognize the symptoms of student trauma. And the things that we can do as teachers to recognize those and to help the students. And I would say that my administration, as well as district leadership, would say before you teach, before you open up a book, building relationships with these students is the most important thing. And as a new teacher coordinator, I will tell new teachers every day, I don't care if you teach the first week of school, you build those relationships with your classes, build the relationships with your families, because ultimately that's the most important thing about our kids.
And it gets back also to the challenge. Nicole, there's also a challenge of those teachers being able to live in the communities in which they teach. And here, when you're strung out across a number of islands, you know, and where affordability is a challenge, you may find yourself 30, 40 miles or minutes even from the local community in which you're drawing the students from.
And some people enjoy that commute home. It gives them a chance to debrief. And some people generally, though, they tend to live a little bit closer to where they work. And simply for the fact that many of our teachers, especially if you're in a single family, you need to work a second job. And that sometimes is unfortunate. That I know that people, I want to recognize their passions, and if they choose to do that, but having to leave work at 4 because you've got to go to your second job, that's hard. We need teachers to come to school every day refreshed and not stressed out themselves and be really willing to accept our children and give them the best that we can. I'm fortunate that I can go home to my kids at night and not have to work a second job, and I can get a good night's sleep and go to work the next day. And I really would hope the same for my colleagues, to be able to have that option to be able to do those same things so we can meet those kids, you know, face on every day.
Talking about the quality of life here in the Florida Keys, and we asked our mainland listeners if they had any questions for folks who have put stakes down here in the Florida Keys. And we got this question from Maurice. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Maurice from Hollywood, Florida. When I travel to Key West for vacation, of course I get the idea that it would be great to stay there. And I've talked to some locals about staying there, and they always talk about the high cost of living. I imagine other people have tried moving to Key West before, and my question is, how long do these transplants live in Key West before giving up and moving back to the mainland?
So none of you have given up on it at all. What would you say to Maurice? And I think Maurice speaks for a lot of mainlanders who come to visit and fish or just enjoy the sights, and to say, what would it be like?
That's a great question. Every time I travel and people see I'm going to Key West, they ask me, and I tell them, I'm very positive. I love where I live. I tell them about my rental situation, and they stop asking about Key West immediately. And they say, it's like Manhattan. I'm like, I know, it's like Manhattan, except we have a Ross.
Debbie, how about it? What would you say to Maurice if you run into him?
Maurice, I would say, take a look at the rents. it's not easy to live here, but what we call it is the price of paradise, and it is worth every penny. And I will fight tooth and nail to stay here. I'm not leaving.
Debbie Zutant is a bartender here in the lower Florida Keys. Debbie, thank you for sharing your story with us here on the live Florida Roundup. Gwen Filosa, reporter at the in the Florida Keys. Gwen, always great to have you, and thank you for sharing your reporting with us. And Nicole Smith, your last Friday of summer vacation with us here on WLRN. How about it, Nicole? Thank you so much for spending it with us. We really appreciate it. Best of luck in the next school year as well. Still to come, how can the Keys keep its authenticity as it becomes even more popular? The Florida Roundup live from Key West continues after this. Stick around. Of the Florida Roundup. It's Life at the Edge in the Florida Keys. Great to be here on this Friday afternoon in Key West at the studios of Key West. A great host for us here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for being with us. Brian Roberts, our musician for the hour. Brian, great to have you here as well. How about it? All right, so let's talk about the Keys staying the Keys here. How about it? The natural beauty, the carefree lifestyle, up and down the Keys. This has all attracted people here for centuries. Pirates and profiteers, artists and athletes all coming to the Keys. But, you know, as big business like corporate hotel owners, financiers, and growing flocks of tourists put new demands on the Florida Keys, how does it change the character of this place? You talk to anybody who's been here for more than a year, and they'll tell you, it's not the place that I first came to. Is that true? Is the authentic spirit still alive in the Florida Keys? Can the essence of what makes the Keys, withstand the pressures of a 21st century? 800-743-WLRN is the telephone. 800-743-9576. Brian is with us, our musician here. Brian Roberts, Nancy Klinginer, our southernmost reporter. And Christopher Schultz is a restaurant and bar owner, co-author of Quit Your Job and Move to Key West, The Complete Guide.
So it's his fault.
So it's his fault, Chris. That's right. That's right. So is it your fault, Chris?
Yeah, I'll take the blame.
You're taking the blame for all of it. So, Nan, you've been here for better part of two decades. Brian, you've been here for
a long time.
Long time.
Yes.
I'll ask you two first. Brian, you first. Does the Keys remain authentic? Is it the Keys that you imagined when you first came here? As it is evolved?
There are a lot more people here. We were snowbirds when I was a kid in the 80s, and it was very different. We actually came down on the old bridges, a lot of the old bridges, and it's a lot like it was, but it has definitely changed.
Nan, how has it changed in your 27 years?
Well, your intro reminded me of a joke that's popular around here, which is how many Key Westers does it take to screw in a light bulb? And the answer is one and two more to tell them how much better the old light bulb was. And, you know, as soon as I got here in 1991, I was hearing people telling me about the good old days and how much better it was basically when they got here. Mm-hmm. And that's true. And I get it. It's hard. It's really hard when people and places that you love change or go away. But at the same time, new things happen. And I think Chris is actually a great example of that. He's constantly coming up with something new. And new things like the studios of Key West or the Tropic Cinema and older institutions. Older institutions take in new people and try new things, and you learn more about the island's history the longer you're here. And, you know, we were just talking yesterday with one of the artists in residence who's here for a month at the studios of Key West, and she was like, I don't want to leave.
Right. From New York.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, we still got it.
Yeah. And still got it and still building upon it, Chris. You've staked your fortune in all of this.
I don't know if it's a fortune.
Not
a lot
yet.
Of debt.
Right. But the owner of multiple restaurants, you know, how important is it as on the front line of that hospitality industry that you are reflecting and contributing to the authentic spirit of the Keys?
I think it's being adaptable to what happens. There's not one place in this world that is desirable that has not changed in 20 years. Mm-hmm. And Key West has changed for its good and its bad. I've been here 19. And what was available to us then and what is available to us now is a completely different story. We have studios of Key West. You have the Key West Theater, Tropic Cinema. The amount of backing of artists here and nonprofits are staggering for a community of 26,000. So I think when someone is coming here with fresh eyes, they're seeing the magic that still exists here. And that's something that's not going to change.
Does that magic sometimes is it lost on veterans who as Nan referred to and Brian and yourself even, it wasn't what it used to be?
No, nothing is. I'm not either.
Yeah.
I used to go out till 4 in the morning.
Now
forward,
you're standing still, right, Chris? Because if you're not moving forward, you're standing still. We asked our listeners again about, you know, their thoughts of the Florida Keys, especially from a mainlander perspective. And I'll tell our control room back in Miami, get ready for clip 3 here. Lou Grammer in Miami had a question that he wanted to ask some folks here in the Keys. Go ahead, Lou.
Compared to cities like Miami and Fort Lauderdale, how vibrant is the cultural life in Key West?
So right to the heart of what all three of you, I think, represent here. Brian, how about it?
Well, I don't get up there enough to really know what's going on 100% up there. But down
here. You
mean
the mainland?
Yeah, the mainland, yes.
Yeah. Not Stock Island.
You go up once in a blue. Yeah, right. Well, I do live on Big Pine, so I get up that way.
Yeah.
But down here, it's really come along. The past, I'd say, 10 years or so, I play at bars. I play, events and this and that. It's mostly cover music. But now we've had an influx of artists that have come in, and it's changing. You know, people are coming to Key West to hear original music, which is really wonderful. And, in the 90s when I started singing and playing, it was just Brown Eyed Girl, the Eagles, James Taylor, which is wonderful, and I love to do that. But, I mean...
No Jimmy Buffett requests anymore?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And there are some musicians that say, I will not play Jimmy Buffett. I think they're jealous. but I will certainly play. I met Jimmy Buffett once. He was so gracious to me, I'll never forget it. I don't know if he remembers meeting me, but... but, yeah, it's so wonderful to see so many local musicians... writing their music and performing down here. Yeah. It's just a great thing.
We're going to hear an original composition here in just a couple of minutes from Brian as well. But Nan and Chris, how do you answer Lou and asking about the cultural life in Key West?
Well, pound for pound, I'd say we have it pretty good here.
Yeah.
I mean, between Christmas and Easter, you start to long for a night when you can just like go home and watch TV because there's just so much to do. And you just think, this is incredible. I live in this town of 25,000 and I have all these options available to me. I mean, there are certain things that, we just can't do in scale that the mainland can, but then that's a reason to go visit the mainland.
Chris, does the cultural evolution of Key West, does that help you as a business owner retain employees, retain the kind of workforce talent that you need to grow your restaurant and bar business?
Yeah, and we deal with multiple locations, and the way that we've been able to keep a lot of employees is to really put a lot of time and effort into authenticity. And whether that's when we're doing our cocktails, when we're doing food, and in the musicians. Over the past bit, I had trouble booking musicians, and no offense to the James Taylor cover bands, but I didn't want to hear another one or I was going to shoot myself. So we found there's been a lot of the young people that grew up here, especially conks, like people lived here a long time, Chris Toller, Jared Eiselman, Tony Baltimore has come down here, and Nick Norman. That have come down and are really putting a stamp on original and authentic music. And so that makes it fun for us to book stuff.
So, Chris, I got to ask, as the author of the book, do you still recommend quitting your job and moving to Key West?
Yeah, if you want three more.
Chris Schultz, a restaurant and bar owner, entrepreneur, author of the book, co-author, Quit Your Job and Move to Key West. Nancy Klingner, our Southernmost reporter. Brian Roberts, we want you to play us out on one of those original compositions that you are speaking about here. Brian Roberts, ladies and gentlemen, original composition here, live from the Florida Keys on WLRN.
All right. He's out of a job, out of a car, out of a girl. Said with beer on his breath in the setting sunlight. So it's a point going through life, feeling oppressed by everything around you.
That old life is always squeezing too tight. Can't let it push you around. Can't let it hold you back. He said, I have no reason. I've got nothing lowering me by my life's brave the worst of seasons. My decision to leave was solely based on semi-tropical reasons.
The Florida Roundup is produced by Bridget O'Brien, our news director, Terrence Shepard, Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director, engagement editor, Katie Lepre, Teresa Frontato, our digital director, and our camera person for our Facebook Live on WLRN. Program director, Peter J. Meritz, technical supervisor back in Miami is Jason Zabka. Engineer Doug Peterson and his son made sure we stayed on the air from the studios. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for everything you've done. I'm Tom Hudson. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to our Key West crowd for coming out. Thanks to Brian Roberts, our musician, and thanks to the studios of Key West for hosting our special edition of the Florida Roundup. Thank you very much for your support at WLRN.
Nothing lowering me by my life's brave the worst of seasons. My decision to be